happy Monday. A victory Monday on Grant and Danny. Welcome in. Thanks for making the show part of your day on The Fan. The Commanders have won again. They are 5-2. And we will be discussing the game, celebrating an incredible home performance throughout the day with you here on G&D. Great guest lineup today includes Jay Gruden on the show at 5 o'clock for his normal Monday appointment. We'll also have Jeremy McNichols calling in. He averaged 6 yards a carry, 42 yards on the ground yesterday. He's been magnificent, Danny, in his role early this season. I'm excited to talk to him because he's good on special teams, too.
Yeah, he's been tremendous.
He will call in at 4:30 today. We also have interviews for you with Jeremy Chinn, who had 4 tackles and helped out a defense that nearly pitched the first shutout for Washington since 1991 as they dominated the Panthers. And you'll also hear from De'Ami Brown coming up at 2:45 today. De'Ami had a nice 23-yard catch from Marcus Mariota, who was fantastic off the bench. We'll talk a lot about Jaden Daniels' injury and where we go from here, if he plays against the Bears, if he doesn't. But I got to tip my cap to everybody involved yesterday in this operation. You play a bad team at home, good teams are supposed to handle bad teams at home. And not only did they do that, they just completely destroyed Carolina 40-7. This does not happen around here. This does not happen for this team, Danny, where you are in multiple home games in a row, not using your important players in the fourth quarter because the game is already over. What an amazing thing we're witnessing from this Washington Commanders team.
Wild. Just absolutely wild. You touched on some of it. Everything's so weird, right? I mean, as I'm watching yesterday, it's kind of with, bittersweet joy, if that's even a thing, not knowing the extent of the injury to Daniels. And they're just dismantling an inferior opponent. Carolina's an embarrassing train wreck. They should be relegated. But there's no such thing, so they just have to go and pick first or second again. But Washington dominated in every possible way that you could dominate. They have already won more games than they did last year. They have already won more games than they did the entirety of last season. I can't stop thinking about that. I can't stop thinking about Daniels getting hurt. I can't stop thinking about how good every element of this game looked for Washington. I said, I went on the pregame show with Dat and Day and Linnell, and they're like, how do you feel? Like, you're a little bit nervous? And I was like, honestly, I'm not, which is not like me. I don't really do that. I live very nervously, especially when it comes to sports. But what they've shown is if you're an inferior team, you're going to get the bleep kicked out of you. Come on by and catch these hands.
They won by 33.
Yeah, and it could have been way worse.
They have not. That's true. And that was with them taking their foot off the gas. Mm-hmm. For the entire fourth quarter. They have not won by 33 points in 9 years until yesterday. They are 5-2 for the first time in 6 years. That was the Alex Smith 2018 year. Although there was nothing about that 5-2 start where they're checking the ball down and doing very little offensively that felt like this. So I will be dismissive of 2018 and tell you that those two seasons don't really belong in the same sentence. This is the best scoring team in the NFL right now. I mean, think about this. Think about Washington. We're talking about the Commanders, the old Redskins, the football team. That group, 31 points per game they are scoring right now. They are excellent offensively. They are an elite offensive operation, a well-oiled machine, clinical. They are number one in the NFL in scoring differential. I'm going to say that again. Line up 32 teams. Who has outscored their opponents by the most points? It is 5-2 Washington. That, by the way, is the metric in every sport, run differential in baseball, point differential in the NFL, that I use to sort legitimacy. When you and I are doing a power rankings, I don't necessarily just look at the wins and losses. The first category I look at is scoring differential.
It tells you who's 5-2 is more impressive. This team's 5-2 or that team's 5-2. You're plus 5, it means you're like Minnesota. Was it last year, the year before, where they won a million close games? They deserve credit for that, but everyone knew they weren't as good as some of the top teams.
This is just so refreshing and exhilarating. It's been amazing for this last 2 months, and how quickly this is happening is staggering. Right now, to go from a bottom five NFL team in everybody's preseason rankings to now the goalposts having moved so that when you do another impressive Sunday thing, when you blow another team out, people are saying, well, you're not playing anyone. It was a month ago that you were the no one. It was a month ago when you were the Panthers, you were the Browns, and now I'm not impressed by your 30-point win over those teams. I'm not impressed that you got to rest your starters in the fourth quarter. But a month ago, you were telling me I sucked and I was on the same level as those teams. So I will have none of that discussion today, frankly. It'd be one thing if you're beating Carolina 17-14. You top the Browns like the Eagles did last week, by 3 or 4 points. You beat them 13-10. This is 34-13, and you stopped playing with 20 minutes to go. This is 40-7. 40-7. That is Alabama against Troy. This is ridiculous what we're seeing. So let them say whatever they want to say about who Washington's playing. Because the fact is, they're not just winning against bad teams, they're destroying bad teams. That's what really good teams do.
That's the summary. I mean, it began, Cincinnati wasn't playing particularly well. So they won this back and forth game that was thrilling and riveting and awesome. But out of that, the wake of that Giants game, right, where they won, you could argue because the Giants kicker pulled something pregame and things went differently, but they were trailing deep into the second half. It wasn't until a fumble punch, I think, that they ended up, driving down and taking the lead. Nothing but field goals. But you now look in retrospect, and those were building blocks instead of one-offs. And what usually happens here is any good action, like you win a close game, a hard-fought game, and everyone says all the right things, but there's no progress made, right? Anytime the groundhog emerges its head from subterranean levels and goes, oh, this is what it's like out here. There is a predator. There's an owl or a giant hawk streaking above to tear you limb from limb and send you back down into your hole again. That's not what's happening. They are building.
Yeah.
Like there is legitimate progress being made. Players are playing better than they were 2 months ago. That's it's all refreshing, honestly, just that this whole thing is damn fun, but just kind of digging into the nuance of how and why and where it's you're seeing continued improved play instead of one time someone has a nice game. That's cool. Now this is what you expect.
Yes.
Right? That really to me is the most remarkable turn about all of this.
What players are playing worse football now than they were a month ago? You can't find them.
Mm-hmm.
What areas of this team are going in the wrong direction, not the right direction? You can't find them. I love so many things about yesterday. I don't mean the result, I mean the process. They got the ball back with 2 minutes and 22 seconds to go before the half, and they were already up 20-0.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their backup quarterback in the game, and the ball was at the 8-yard line. You remember that?
Yeah, of course.
This was such an easy run the ball a couple of times, try to get a first down, and maybe if things go well, go get a field goal spot. Nothing's ever been more easy than that, by the way. Backup quarterback, shadow of your own goalpost.
You're dominating.
2 minute warning. Let's not give them any momentum. And that is not how they think on this team. That is not how Dan Quinn wants them to think. That is not what Cliff Kingsbury does. They told Marcus Mariota, let's go get a touchdown. And they did. 92 yards on 8 plays, and he lit up a bad Panthers defense on that drive, and it changed his entire day. And I thought philosophically, that was the tell for what was the second half. They didn't do anything differently without Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
Marcus Mariota, 18 of 23 for 205 and a pair of scores. That is a Daniels stat line. By the way, he ran 11 times, probably more than I would have.
A lot also, more than I would have, yeah.
A Daniels stat line. They didn't miss a beat. If you look at the EPA per play, that category we always talk about with Jaden leading the NFL, Marcus Mariota yesterday in EPA per play, Danny, turned in the 8th best quarterback game of the season. I would imagine a few above that are Daniels. But my point is, that was the Jaden Daniels performance. And I think there's this perception on the outside in, like this is just a one-man thing. It's Jaden Daniels, and all the receivers are terrible, and he makes all the running backs a lot better, which he does, and the line stinks, but he makes them better, which to an extent he does. But no, this is a good football team. Can we please acknowledge that the line is good, that the Terry McLaurin was outstanding with Mariota throwing to him, that Brown making plays and the other Brown making plays, and the line who gave him the second most time to throw in the National Football League yesterday, 3.5 seconds, and the 17th best pressure percentage, among the teams right in the middle of the pack yesterday, that they played their butts off for Marcus Mariota. And while Daniels was on the sideline, and hopefully he's back very soon because he's special and unique and he's the best in the building by a mile, they didn't miss him. They punted once. It was the same thing they've been doing. Cliff Kingsbury, take a bow.
Yeah, just mauling teams. I mean, at one point, I think they had 132 total yards and 130 were on the ground. Just to show you that they're able to do that, even without the other kinds of threats. But I want to go to that two-minute drill super quick. Because their initial plan, having Carolina actually makes a good play. Punts it deep. It's at the Washington 8 to start the drive with 2:22 to go. I actually do believe they were going to hand it off a couple times and let's take our 20-point lead to halftime. The first play, they run at 2:22, 3 yards. Let it get the two-minute warning. They're not hurrying up.
Yeah, that by design, you're just, let's get to two.
Let's get a little bit of space.
Less chance for them to have the ball back with time.
Mariota off the right end for 4 yards. The next play, they don't run for 40 seconds almost. They can't help but get a first down, and then they went, you know what? Carolina's not calling timeout, desperate to get the football back. Let's take this foot right here. If you can see on the YouTube video, I'm pointing to my right foot. Let's put it on their throat. We're already kicking their ass. Watch this.
Yeah.
Once they got out of the shadow of their goal line, it went from, we'll go to halftime up 20. It's, well, why don't we go to halftime up 27? And that, we can do that. We have that gear. Just in case you get frisky. Just in case you have any idea this is going to go differently at any point this afternoon, you're wrong. You're here because we're allowing you to be here. You're going to receive the business. I could not have been more impressed by that drive. That was unbelievable.
27 to nothing at the half. They got to 34 to nothing, by the way. That was the first time since, you guys remember the 3-touchdown game by Chris Cooley in the 05 winning streak at home.
Most fun I ever had at that stadium.
They led the Cowboys 35 to nothing, I believe, at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last time they had a lead of that large. We're seeing things we haven't seen in decades. And I just like everything about how they operate. Yesterday is an example. It's smart stuff. Like, mm-hmm. Brian Robinson only had 12 carries. Jeremy McNichols had 7. He's your third running back.
Yeah.
Austin Ekeler only had 4. They don't want to overwork Ekeler because they want him healthy for the duration of the year. And internally now, they're probably setting their eyes on maybe having to play into the playoffs. So let's not overwork Brian Robinson, who scores a touchdown every week. Let's work McNichols in, who's going to be calling into us at 4:30 today. He had 7 for 42. So collectively, you run the ball 27 times for what was right around 130 yards with 3 running backs. And then Mariota ran all over the place. The two quarterbacks combined for 14 carries and another 84 yards on the ground. That's how you get a net rushing of 214. If I was going to pick any nits, because I love how they called the second half, I love how Kingsbury does not play the run the ball and run clock game. They were still slinging it when they're up by 30.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was awesome. Big 12 Kingsbury just wants the next touchdown. Sign me up for that. My only gripe, and this goes back to the very first game of the season when they were doing this with Daniels on the goal line. I don't understand why they're running quarterbacks and taking shots when they're up by a million points. You've already lost one in the game.
Yep.
You're going to go to your third quarterback here?
Yeah, I didn't love that. What it felt to me, and you could call me crazy pants if you want to.
Crazy pants.
It felt to me like we're normally, if things were equal, we would just keep handing it off to get the clock running. We actually need to get Mariota some work. That's sort of, it felt like we're just going to run our offense because we need the work on our offense. And this is, they're not posing any threat to us in terms of a pass rush or disrupting. So I want, you saw a few throws from Mariota that just weren't really on target or either late or, a little bit off.
Right when he
took over. In
terms
of rhythm, yeah, when he took over. So it said to me, like, we might need him. We don't know right now. We don't know if this is just today, if this is a month, if this is IR, God forbid, but let's get him some work in a lower stakes environment.
I totally agree. They went tempo in the second half at one point,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, why on earth, with this score, are they going tempo? Tackles made, they're getting to the line. And I was actually talking, Kyme and I, in the press box about this, and we were like, you know what? They might have to use it against the Bears. And let's get him some work doing this, is their logic, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know what the status is. So, yeah, I think you're right, because he didn't play a lot and well in the preseason, and then he was hurt, if you remember,
yes,
at the start of the year, so there have been plenty of reps missed. I'm not sitting here and going to pretend like Marcus Mariota, starting against Chicago, should be expected to go out and post a 132 quarterback rating. That's a really good defense. And if Daniels misses the Bears game, people are going to be totally bummed, number one, because your franchise quarterback misses a game.
Mm-hmm.
But having talked to so many fans leaving the building yesterday, to the extent that I wasn't even aware, there is this online back and forth between Bears and Commanders fans about the draft picks at the top of the board that I didn't even know about. I don't really understand, frankly, because why does Caleb Williams matter? Seems like your guy's doing pretty well, but and vice versa, but whatever. I guess there's this huge kind of exchange between the fan bases and this countdown to next week, and obviously it will be a gigantic bummer after they change the time of the game for the national audience and the chance of a one versus a two and Williams against Daniels if Daniels can't go. But the real bummer for me is going to be I've circled that game for several weeks, not because it's number one against number two, but for me because I think that is the best defense they've played all season, and I thought it was going to be the truest best test offensively against a really good defense, which is the antithesis of what, say, Carolina is. Baltimore, not even a really good defense, although they played pretty well 2 weeks ago. But this was the game where the Bears defense is the real deal, and I wanted to see Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury in the offense against them. And if you don't get to, I think that's going to be tough. And if Mariota comes out and struggles and plays in that game, we're just going to say, oh, well, they had their backup quarterback, when really maybe something got found out about the offense. So I do hope Daniels plays because it would be a blast for everybody at home. And I hope he's healthy, and we'll get more into him in a minute. But man, oh man, does three straight home wins and a couple of blowouts in the process change the experience and the vibes in the stadium. I mean, leaving, people were just on cloud nine last night.
They have played three home games and have played better each time they played at home.
Can you imagine thinking that they were going to do better than they did against the Browns?
Yeah. No, first of all.
We were in Leesburg on Friday, and we had all the listeners jumping on mic to give us their predictions, and they were basically just topping each other one after another. Oh, 34-13, 37-10, 40-10 or whatever, and each time you and I are kind of laughing like, this is just
how
hilarious.
Fun is this?
Like,
and it was actually worse than all of them.
And not one person correctly predicted how bad the beatdown was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I had them winning by double digits. It's not even close. I guess I was right in that regard, but it was, 20-something less than I thought. But thinking about the big picture here, and that's what I'm very focused on. I love beating Carolina. That was awesome. The Ron Bowl. We have the feet be where your feet are trophy, I guess, for now. But big picture is all I really care about with this thing. And individual moments are nice. Individual games are nice, et cetera. I care about Daniels and the high ceiling and where this organization could go in the future. But for them, one of the big picture things I was thinking about was you are trying really hard to convince people that it's different. You're trying really hard for a reticent fan base that didn't show the enthusiasm and zeal and gusto earlier on this year that you would think. You draft a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback that is the baddest dude in the valley with a billion-dollar smile who shows up at 4 a.m. and is outworking everybody. He's probably on his VR headset right now looking at Bears defensive alignments, okay? You have the every reason for excitement, and it wasn't really there just yet. It wasn't. People were hesitating to buy in. Well, you know a great way to get people to buy in is you reward them. And here's your reward. You go to Nubs West Stadium and you watch them win by a million again and again and again.
Yeah.
If you were a paying customer yesterday, I bet you had a great time. And there, now you build fans, right? It's the other stuff you do your best to control, the make it easy to get in and out, all the parking stuff, every complaint that we all have. I think a cable broke yesterday on some fans.
Well, here's the symbolism. I want to talk about that cable because it happened right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was literally in front of the press box. Now, this is not a FedEx Field Northwest Stadium's a bad place bit because it was a TV cable.
Mm-hmm.
CBS hangs before the game.
Sure.
It came down. Not really the stadium's fault. But this cable falls, and there is this embarrassing moment where it falls on the crowd, and everyone's kind of lifting it up and messing with it and trying to figure out what to do and calling for help and security and whatever. And as this is happening, this is not an exaggeration, we're all in the press box looking at this like, oh my God, this cable fell. Look, this guy's got it on top of him. What's going on? And you could see in the front row of like all the beat writers, they start like tweeting and, here comes the cable fell at the stadium.
Yeah, the Tom cable fell down.
As this is happening, Dante Fowler picks off Andy Dalton and is returning it for a touchdown. And it sounds like, oh, that's funny, that's poetic, you're exaggerating. I mean, quite literally, as they're typing out that a cable just fell on fans and whatever, they now have to delete their tweet so that they could talk about the fact that Dante Fowler just returned an interception 67 yards for a score, and the Commanders' defense has them on the board with a 7-0 lead. And if that is not apropos and symbolic of what playing good football and that winning environment can do to put some lipstick on those blemish problems that they have,
right?
To mask those deficiencies, where literally you have spun the narrative in front of my eyes from stupid stadium to Crowd goes crazy.
Raucous environment.
By the way, you know what happened in the crowd? They lift up the cable and they kind of start jumping around and dancing with it. And now the cable was just something to celebrate with. And they start hanging it back up. And it was like nothing ever happened. But if on that play they give up a long touchdown and you're angry, now the cable being, you know, resting on your shoulders probably is a little more annoying. See what I'm saying?
Of course I do. Of course I do. It's another indignity that you suffered.
Just amazing. But we should get into the Jaden Daniels injury in detail and what this now means for this week. I do want to point out that we're going to take Dan Quinn live. He talks at 3:30. This will be the most official first chance at a true update on Daniels. We'll see if Quinn's willing to say whether or not he's got a chance to play against the Bears on Sunday. And you will hear that press conference live and first right here on The Fan. So make sure you're listening a little over 1 hour when he speaks at 3:30. We're Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Third and nine for Carolina. Dalton on the move. He tried to throw it to his own man. He threw it to the other team. Intercepted by Fowler. And he's gonna go. Touchdown, Commanders.
Ian Eagle on the call. CBS yesterday. Dante Fowler with a pick six. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on The Fan. By the way, I saw some people calling it a thick six. That's not fair to do to Dante Fowler. I think a thick six has to be an interior defensive lineman or a fat person running down the field.
Like, you need to report eligible. You know what I mean? Like,
okay. I mean, but defensive players don't do that.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the kind of guy that would have to.
I get it.
See what I'm saying?
I know this. It should look like me running with the football. That's a thick six.
Mm-hmm.
Dante Fowler's an athlete.
Yeah.
He quite literally jumped over top of and, like, on one leg, juked Andy Dalton. That's not a thick six. A thick six is like, I'm carrying the ball with both hands. And it feels like I'm doing exactly what I was told to do in third grade when I first held a football. Like, that's a thick six.
Like, Jaden Daniels' first touchdown pass. Thick six.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Dante Fowler balled out, by the way.
Had a day.
The latest of the Adam Peters additions to be great on a Sunday. And we need to do something. I show meeting real quick. When I mention Adam Peters, there should be a chime or a sound. Or like maybe like a Ben Johnson alert, but an Adam Peters alert or something. Because that guy needs more attention and credit and flowers for being great and not just handsome. He put on a freaking clinic this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
This happened overnight. Yeah. Like, people are sleeping on how insane what we're seeing is. But this Dante Fowler play that he made over and over again, the pick six was awesome. How about his fourth and one play, Dan?
Yeah. Knife through the line of scrimmage, like... It was like prime LeVar Arrington. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going, who is this?
That's perfectly said.
Like, who is this?
Penn State jumping over the line, LeVar Arrington. He had another play where he was giving chase, and he's so fast.
Yeah.
But Dalton, if you remember, was like rolling to his right. They had this throwback screen set up for Leggett at the top of the TV, basically,
right.
And he had to airmail him because Fowler just came untouched and was about to drill him in the ear hole. The entire first
disruptive
half, I thought, was everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, so the consistency has always kind of been the elusive thing for Fowler. He's had some great games, but regardless, that was one of them yesterday. You look at the stat sheet and you go, okay, obviously the touchdown's going to stand out, but only a couple of tackles, one sack, one TFL. No. If you know.
Impactful.
They couldn't do a whole lot because of him.
All right, so Jaden Daniels, here's the bummer. This is kind of the thing that made everyone uneasy. Even though they're leading 17-0, 20-0, 27-0, 34-0, there was this feel at the stadium, and you'd have to tell me if you were feeling it at home, but there was this feeling in the pit of your stomach like the game wasn't going great, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they were doing everything you could ever dream of, and their offense didn't miss a beat. I mean, they had one of their most efficient stretches with Mariota at quarterback that they've had all year. They just kind of picked up where they've left off without Daniels. But you know that that's not sustainable without their superstar, most valuable offensive player. And he is the entire point this year. He is the entire franchise. So him not being on the field because of injury, when all we've talked about is durability and the slenderness of the frame, and he took a shot earlier in the year. He's played three home games. Mm-hmm. He's missed time in two of them, you know, where he's come off the field and someone else has had to go onto the field. Driscoll trots on. Mariota trots on. I don't know that this issue's necessarily going away. That's the nerve-wracking part of this, because he's going to take hits. But at the end of that 46-yard run to open the game, he went down really awkwardly. And sometimes he goes down really awkwardly.
Yes.
It's not the traditional like dive forward or the traditional slide, which he couldn't have done there anyway. That was a fall forward situation, and he kind of just drops down onto his butt, and he gets crunched from behind and folded up. But it is fair to say he goes down awkwardly, correct?
Yes.
Like regularly.
Yes, and this was my concern then, and it's my concern now. And that, you know, as good as it's gone, and it has gone real good, yesterday was a reminder. That's how quick. That's how quick. This could all go away. And again, I hope he's fine. And by all accounts, it seems like this is not, you know, he's got to stay in the hospital overnight and super serious. And again, I'm not a doctor. I have no idea. We're going to find out more today. But that reminder, I mean, again, it's for those of us, and this is a lot of you listening, I hate to bring it up, but there's no way to avoid the comparison. You were there for 2012, man. You remember the first time there was the concussion against Atlanta. Then he played the next week and did something incredible. Then the injuries happened on the scrambles or on the design keepers or whatever you want to call it. And this whole joyride we were on got ripped away from us. It's hard not to remember or feel some of those parallels and have some of those feelings come bubbling up to the surface yesterday on this amazing play to go from yes, 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 oh God. Right? Because you could see it. He didn't come out of the game right away. He clearly wasn't comfortable. It took him a little bit longer on the TV copy. I don't know what it was like for you guys in the stadium or in the press box to be able to see it. But there were clearly a couple plays that were run where he is kind of wincing and grimacing and doing that thing where he kind of is, you know, fidgeting his uniform, but not in a comfortable way, not in like your normal type behavior. Then that run to the left where he just sort of has a guy, you would think he'd put him on skates or outrun him or something. He just sort of gives a half-hearted fake and just kind of glides to the ground gently like a feather, and you're going, something's wrong here. Like, this is not normal. Then, you know, a couple minutes later, they finally start to address it on the telecast, whether spotter found it or something like that. And then it begins. Then you go blue medical tent. Then he's slamming his helmet, and it's just, oh, my God.
I want to say that's not to make this kind of – it's most important thing we can say is, by all accounts, they avoided what seems to be a very serious injury. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that I heard in the locker room, every player I talked to who had talked to him said he was very upbeat and positive and was saying, essentially, it's an aggressive timetable, hopefully,
yep,
is what I gathered, got out of it. That's number one. Number two, right away you could tell they didn't think this was going to be some type of season-defining or season-altering injury.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you never know until they do more of the testing today that was scheduled, and Dan Quinn's going to talk at 3:30. But I also want to point out that as he walked off the field after the game, he was, you'll see me doing this on the YouTube chat, if you're one of the several hundred people watching us right now on YouTube, on the 106.7 The Fan page, but he basically walked off the field doing the, like, doing the I can't hear
jumping
you,
jacks,
like,
yeah,
pump the crowd up, jumping jack arms, like, going into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing that if the rib is really bothering you a whole lot, I don't think. Also, by him being on the sideline, I kept waiting for him to come back out of the tunnel and walk out on the sideline. Because if I learned anything about injuries, not a doctor, in my 4 years on the beat, if it's pretty serious, you're not going back out on the field. They don't want you anywhere near the players that are running over to the sideline. They don't want you having to move around any more than you have to. You stay in the trainer's room. They plop you up on the table. They get you in the shower. They get you out of there as soon as they can. You get the treatment. Your family comes down. The fact that he was out there again in street clothes, standing there, walking around, hands in pockets, talking to guys, was also a tell to me, mm-hmm, that this is closer to pain management than, like, he broke his rib, right? But we just don't know anything until Dan Quinn speaks at 3:30. And it's still possible he could miss time, even if it's not overly serious, because you want to be extra careful. Like, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I'll be unpopular this week. I would treat the Bears game as less important than the Giants game that follows as a divisional matchup that's more important for where you're going this year, and just making sure he's 100%,
mm-hmm,
even if that means he doesn't get to play in the game everybody cares so much about, which is him and Jaden Daniels this week. Be 100%. The way you play, there is no 75-85%. Now, you're going to run. You're going to take weird hits. You're going to be involved in our read option game. It's not like you're some pocket passer who's just going to get the ball out and you can go 34 dropbacks without being touched. That's not what he is at this point of his career and how they use him. So there's big decisions he'll have to make this week, but I think a lot of those things bode very, very well. The only time I was really scared, and I don't know, you tell me what you saw at home on TV, but I saw one shot where they were showing him take warm-up passes, and after he went back out on the field out of the blue tent and grabbed his helmet, like trying to talk them into letting him play, before Mariota took his first snap after the Forbes interception, he takes one throw, and immediately it was like a pitcher who knows his elbow's cooked, right? He immediately grabs his rib, very obvious pain, writhing, and he rips off his helmet and slams it down, and that's where I thought, oh no, and that's when they walked him back to the locker room. But pretty much everything that's happened since then has made me feel a lot better.
Yeah, you know, this time, the big long...
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
And again, I'm not ripping anything you're saying. I think you're 100% right. I think your assessment is right on.
You're talking about from a 10,000-foot view, the knock was the frame, the size, the durability.
Yes.
And he came off the field with a rib thing, probably lost his air, but hitting the sternum in the first home game. And this is the third home game, and Marcus Mariota played almost the whole game.
And we're going to miss because his frame and the way he went down on a great play, right? Like I addressed this a million times, but some of his, you look at some of his highlights of these electric, unbelievable runs at LSU. They always end terribly. I don't mean like fumbles and turnovers, but they always end with this, with him going down in a way that is not natural for human beings to go to the ground. And that's what scared me throughout. And that was my only reservation about drafting him. Still obviously would, and I'm glad they did. But
so let's just say, like, okay, we'll give you the stamp of approval this time. I'm being your wife here. Like, I hear your concerns.
I hear you.
What is the point then, really? Like, what would you do differently? Or is it just, we all need to acknowledge that this is going to be like this, or there's going to be plenty of games where he doesn't finish it.
Yeah, I think it's probably one part, the rational side of, yeah, I'm just going to be at the edge of my seat at all times. Anytime he's out alone, when he's running, when he's moving, I'm just going to sit there and hold my breath and be terrified.
Easy for me to say as just a fat dude watching, he should cut that outside.
100%.
Not only would he have a 90-yard touchdown run if he went to the sideline and scored, which would have been awesome. Can you imagine how much different today would be if he played the whole game?
That's his 90... RG3 is going to outrace everybody moment.
That's the one I've been waiting for. I keep saying this is coming, and he hit the 50-yarder, but the 90-yard touchdown almost happened. But also, I need them to keep rewiring his brain and keep training him outside, outside, outside. Sidelines your friend. Sidelines your friend. You don't need to cut back toward the defenders. Heat-seeking missiles, angry, violent people that want to hurt you, that want to tackle you.
Yeah, that's where the horde is coming from. It's World War Z. They're the zombies.
Don't go inside. Zombies there. Go outside. Mm-hmm. There's cars. There's gas stations. Yep. There's food. Mm-hmm. Like, get to the GD sideline.
Yep.
And he was kind of tasked with that on that run where I go outside, where I think he scores anyway, where I can cut back in inside and we'll see what happens. And if he goes outside, worst case scenario, he gets 25 more yards and he angled out of bounds. That's the one rewiring thing that I want to keep doing. But the fact, Danny, in a very small sample in one game, that they did not miss one beat. Like, they had a drive that was bad, and Mariota clearly was off target on his first three throws. He went 0 for 3. But the way he finished, after that, he was 16 of 20 for 205 yards and two touchdowns, and had what is considered the eighth best quarterbacking performance of the entire season by anybody via EPA per play. It shows you Cliff Kingsbury's got something going here.
He's got something happening, yeah.
It is time to give him his roses, that this is bigger than just they've got an awesome athlete at quarterback, which is the biggest piece of the puzzle. Don't hear me wrong.
Right, they couldn't do it with me back there.
Mariota comes in, and they just went out and scored 40 more points. Again.
Yeah.
On a bad defense. I don't think they would have done that against the Bears. But what do you guys make of the injury? What was your feeling as you were watching the game? A blowout win made you feel good, not knowing about Jaden Daniels was the opposite of that. We are busy today. Jay Gruden at 5. We got Jeremy McNichols calling us at 4:30. You'll hear from De'Ami Brown coming up next segment right here on The Fan. At the top of the hour on Grant and Danny, we'll give out game balls to the best and gassers to the worst. So if you want to line up to help us do that, you can do so at 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines open. Marcus Mariota had a strong passing day. Receivers stepped up for him. Deami Brown made a nice 23-yard catch to get him going on the 92-yard touchdown drive. I found Deami in the locker room after the game to talk about yet another Washington blowout win.
Deami, you guys hang 40 for the second time. Scored 38 or more three times. We haven't seen stuff like this around here very often. How good is this offense right now?
Man, I think we're very good. And, I don't think we always put our best foot forward, but we definitely go out there and want to do the things that we want to do, put up those points. You know, you can see we hurt ourselves a couple times on a couple like false starts and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, we still have that same goal.
Jaden's on his way to Rookie of the Year, and it's been incredible. I don't want to take away from that. Oh, yeah. But I think there is this perception like it's kind of just Jaden making plays. Today with him out, Marcus comes in, and you guys don't miss a beat. What do you think that shows?
Man, you know, that shows the grit and the integrity that we have. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, some people think, like, if somebody go out, things will fall off. But with us, you know, it's not going to fall off. We always want to be on that same foot. You know, with Marcus coming in, you know, we already had confidence in him. You know, we didn't have to second guess or, you know, try to build confidence within him. You know, we already had it. So at the end of the day, you know, we put trust in him to be our QB1 at that time. And, you know, we got our offense going.
The 23-yard completion that you caught and got up the field on, from our angle, like, there wasn't really a lane. I mean, it was right over top of a defender. Ball just kind of ends up at your face mask. I mean, are you the primary there, or, like, were you expecting the ball as you came out of your break? That was probably his best, like...
I think he just went through that progression through his read. I don't think I was the primary or, like, the number one read, but I think he just went through his read, and he trusted me, and threw the ball up.
Last thing... Whether or not Jaden plays next week, it just seems like there's a lot of confidence that you guys can continue to do some of the things you're doing. Like, what changes in terms of the week, the prep?
Man, nothing changes at all. You know, we go out there and we prepare like how we always have. And at the end of the day, you know, we want Jaden out there, but if he isn't out there, you know, we still go through that week and put our work in and go out there and play that game.
This is the first time you've seen this stadium like this, too. Last couple of years, you're like... Really? This is it? I mean, it's different right now.
It feels like a home game now. You know, the past couple years didn't feel like that. But, yeah, we're on a good roll.
That is Deami Brown. Danny, you got to give your guy a little bit of credit. That was a terrific play. The 23-yard completion, and maybe I over-talk about it because of my angle, but from where I saw the play developing it, basically in the corner of the end zone, mm-hmm. There was no lane. It was traffic. And Deami doesn't really see it all the way in. It just kind of hops up on him. Catch, gets upfield. Doesn't get many opportunities, but he is making the most of the very limited chances that he gets.
Essential that continues to happen, right? If the easy model is just to have star to the left, star to the right, right? Two great receivers. You know, your A.J. Brown one side, Devontae Smith the other. Or, you know, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, now Jackson Smith and Jigba. Or Chase and Higgins. I mean, you know the tandems. If you don't have that, then... You make it up by everybody doing something. So it's that we've had a Zacchaeus week, we've had a Noah Brown week, we've had, you know, a couple of big Deami Brown games or moments. So you're going to get limited opportunities. You're not going to be a featured player where you get 5, 6, 7, 10 targets a week. So you got to make the most of when it does happen. And a lot of this is thankless for this receiving core, right? There's a lot of blocking. There's a lot of for the dominant run games. You don't get big gains without those guys holding up and even, you know, winning. They're one-on-one blocking matchups, and he's done a great job in that regard, for sure.
Their offense right now is masterful, and there'll be ebbs and flows. I will be here to tell you, First, when they have a week where they don't get it done, and their defense yesterday was awesome, and they'll get their roses, and we will talk about them as well. But if you would have told me before the game, Jaden Daniels is going to get hurt after their first drive, and they'll get a field goal on it, how many points are they going to score? I just said somewhere between 17 and 25 would have been. And by the way, if you score 25, it's a really good number. Now you bake in a defensive touchdown, which had already happened, right? So there's 10 there. But you go out and score 30 more with Mariota, and it was a casual 30. They could have scored more. There were a few times where they kicked where they would 1,000% go for fourth downs in competitive games. And they have all year long, and they haven't missed a fourth down, by the way. There were times in the fourth quarter where they did. very, very end of the game because Cliff Kingsbury had his foot on the gas, but where they did hit the brakes a little bit and slow their roll. It's just it's a blessing, yeah. If I could say that.
That's what it is.
To be a fan of the must-watch team in the NFL offensively right now. 31 points per game, number one in point differential. All right, next, game balls to the best, gassers to the worst on Grant and Danny. We'll fill up the phones at 800-636-1067, and we are getting ready for Dan Quinn at 3:30 and a Jaden Daniels update that you will hear right here on The Fan.